by the tender mercy of our God. The dawn from on high will break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. And this light will guide our feet to the way of peace. Our story today on this fourth Sunday of Advent comes from Luke's gospel. And as you just heard, Zechariah and Elizabeth are the parents of John the Baptist. They were both greeted by an angel and told the very same piece of information, that Elizabeth, who was barren, was going to be pregnant and give birth to a son. Elizabeth, bright woman that she is, immediately says, "Okay, cool," responds with joy. And Zechariah was maybe a little bit more realistic about their situation and doubted and was unsure. Because of his lack of response, he becomes silent for the entire duration of Elizabeth's pregnancy. Now, I've not been pregnant and don't know what that would be like, but I have had some friends told me that said, you know, that would have been nice if my spouse would have been silent. But that's neither here nor there, just a little tidbit. Anyway, after the child is born, the parents take him to the temple community, and this is where he will be named and welcomed as one of the people. And everyone else is putting their opinions on what this child should be. Everyone else tries to tell Zechariah and Elizabeth, this is what you need to call the child because we know best. And Zechariah shakes his head no, and Elizabeth is the one who says, no, his name is John, but she is not listened to. So finally, Zechariah declares, the kid's name will be John. And in that moment when he uses his power and his privilege to speak, to affirm what Elizabeth says, his voice and speech are restored, and he goes on to deliver this amazing prophecy that we just heard. So the thing about prophecies, they're usually some sort of combination of old and new. They remind those of us who hear them what God has been up to in the past. And then the prophet uses these shared memories to point to what God is doing in our midst or to encourage us to pay attention to what God is about to do in the near future. Remembering is an integral part of prophecy. Yesterday, as I was telling the kids, was the winter solstice. At 4:49 p.m. Central Time, we entered the longest night of the calendar year. For some of us living on this part of the globe, the long nights, the fading sunlight, and the cold temperatures are exhausting for our mental, spiritual health. Our bodies and our beings crave sunlight. It's essential to our growth. Our culture, including Christian stories that we've inherited, often equate darkness with bad or evil or demonic. And we say that light is holy and pure and good. But think of what this message might say to people of various skin tones. Light is good, dark is bad. There's some hidden racism embedded pretty deep in that analogy. We've been taught to fear the darkness and exalt the light. Now, if there were nothing else pressing on our minds today, I would really love to spend a lot of time unraveling this image of dark and light. But for now, I invite you just for a moment to think of all of the things that can be wonderful that are found in the darkness. When I was a kid and not scared of the dark, we would play hide and seek. And when we were in youth group, we'd play hide and seek in the church, which meant there were 10 times more doors and hallways to get lost in. It's the season of holiday lights outside. They look okay in the daytime, but it's at night when the lights really show off. Stargazing, movies, concerts, maybe a first kiss, or maybe the darkness simply offers you peace and quiet. Darkness is not an enemy from which we continually run. Darkness invites us to slow down, to move with intention and to listen. The darkness in our lives comes not to shut us out or detach us from our community, but it's in these moments when the noise of the world stills and the buzz and hum of lights fade, in these moments between night and dawn and the wild unknown, we meet ourselves. See, fear wants to shift our thinking and tell us that in the dark, we're all alone, that our voice is small and insignificant, because when we feel alone, we're less likely to fight back. We're less likely to say or do anything. We freeze, or maybe we simply run away because we're uncomfortable. But love whispers to us, you are not alone. You are not alone. Love stirs inside of us, showing us the messy, chaotic rhythm of beauty that our bodies possess. So in the silence of darkness, we meet ourselves just as we are. No filters, no labels, no membership tests, no masks, no walls, no creeds to hide behind. Just like the trees that dot our landscape outside, our roots take hold in the stillness and the dark. And our branches reach up and out toward dawn's coming lights. We need both darkness and light. A tree's roots can be damaged if they're exposed to direct sunlight for too long. And vice versa, branches and leaves can't grow underground. We need both darkness and light. We need both silence and sound. Now, none of this would make any sense if we've not already seen these patterns in our life time and time again. None of this would make sense if we had not seen what's already been done. I mean, this is Iowa. It's a land filled with changing seasons and patterns of growth and integration. Nothing in this part of the world blooms year round. The leaves fall to the earth and the prairie grasses fade from green to brown. The earth turns in on itself in an amalgamation of decomposition and growth, of breaking down and breaking through. By the tender mercy of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us and give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, and to guide our feet to the way of peace. We too find ourselves sitting in darkness and in the shadow of death. And although we are still in these moments, that doesn't mean we're despairing. We wait and we remember what has happened before, remembering as a spiritual practice. We do not sit idly by as the world moves on chaotically around us. We pause with intention. We pause to pay attention. And so in this moment, it's a chance for us to remember what has been done in this community. Several weeks ago, as a budget proposal was discussed, several people stood up and named themselves as members of the community for 25, 40, even 60 years. We collectively named that this is the oldest church in Ames. We identify with a tradition that spoke out against slavery, that marched and still marches for civil rights, that proclaims that the Spirit of God does not call one gender to lead God's people, but calls all persons into wholeness and community. We affirm this week after week when we practice communion, an extension of God's table to which we have been welcomed and from where we welcome others. We affirm this connection when we called Pastor Hannah to ordained ministry. We remind ourselves weekly of baptisms and the promises that we've made to share this journey together. We also remember in years past, perhaps these pews were closer together, but were less full. We remember the roof sometimes leaks and the ground is sagging beneath the wooden floors. But at the same time, we remember these steps are filled with children, and the coffee shop down the street is filled with thoughtful youth. We remember big decisions that may have brought tears, decisions through which the faithful in this community have prayed. And there have been times of grief and pain when chapters end and changes usher in a new time. And we remember all of those who are a part of this community who have never stepped foot inside this place. Because the span of love from the people in this community reach well beyond the bricks and wood of 6th and Kellogg. And in this week, In the wake of the sentencing of our neighbor, Mr. Martinez, we remember that the emails, the voicemails, and the Facebook comments have paled in comparison to what our LGBTQ siblings face firsthand on a regular basis in our homophobic and transphobic society. It may be tempting for us in this discipline of remembering to get all fired up when we read Zechariah's prophecy. We find it perhaps easier to see his words pointing to a social or political revolution, because Zechariah was speaking his words to a people who were living in an occupied land. He uses words like, we will be raised up, we will be rescued from our enemies, we will serve God without fear. There's multiple references to King David, even though Caesar is technically the one in charge. But we lose some of the fizz of this story because we're not living on the margins of society where soldiers are marching down the streets. But Zechariah's words are loaded with symbolism, pointing not only to the promises that God made in the past, but reassuring the people that God is continually present and working, even as the Roman Empire was in charge. So some of us might hear Zechariah's call to action, that his Advent message might be one of prepare for a fight. And if we keep reading Luke's gospel through and through, we do find glimpses of the many ways that God's mercy will be enacted in tangible economic and social expressions of justice. But in this moment, Zechariah uses his position of power and privilege for a new message. He stands in the presence of his people as a priest in the temple, filled with the Spirit of God. Now, only certain people were trained as priests, and because of their connection and covenant to God and people, they often offered prayers on behalf of the community. And these individuals were recipients of these ancient stories and practices, and they helped the community remember and reset again and again. Zechariah, after being silent for all of Elizabeth's pregnancy, watched for months as Elizabeth was the voice, claiming again and again with joy the message of the angel, speaking of God's mercy and power. But Zechariah watched in silence. And as their child was born and brought to the temple to be counted, other people were telling Zechariah what this child was to be. And Zechariah stood before all who gathered and spoke a message of love and mercy of the God they came to worship. See, the text does not say that Zechariah was filled with rage and anger. This was not a message of revenge. He was in the temple. He was in a place of worship. And he was proclaiming a covenant relationship with God. He was filled with the Spirit of God, and he spoke of bursting light of dawn, tenderness of God, and feet walking the way of peace. As a priest, he's a keeper of stories. And in his time of silence, perhaps he reflected on all of these stories, these messages that he's been receiving. And so in this moment of new birth and unending possibility, through Zechariah, God keeps moving and God keeps speaking. Zechariah could have bowed to social convention and declared that his son could be only this one thing, because that's what everybody says a son should be. And sometimes, as our trans siblings remind us, choosing a name and having your community remember, honor, and respect that name can be an arduous process filled with deep pain and grief, and simultaneously a process filled with joy and affirmation. Because what God is doing now reaches beyond what God has been doing in the past. What we are doing now in the name of love, in the name of God's love, reaches out far beyond what has been done. Maybe some of us on this fourth Sunday of Advent find ourselves craving an intentional time of silence. Maybe others among us feel like the darkness and the silence have crept upon us without our even knowing. And perhaps some among us or those in our lives have been living behind closed doors. Closet doors locked by a homophobic and transphobic society and religion. But in this darkness, we are not alone. God's tender mercy is breaking forth like the dawn. God is calling us to walk the way of peace together. This week, we are called to journey to see God take shape in human form. We bring what we have and we come as we are to this tiny baby to care for, to protect, to love the incarnated, vulnerable expression of God. And so today, we have the tattered remnants of a flag and the pain and exhaustion of a trial and a sentence and the wonderful response of the internet. The internet tells us that it's just a flag, but the flag is a symbol, a physical representation of something far greater than words. May we stand under this symbol as a sign of God's love. And perhaps we can bring these tattered remnants not to wave in a battle cry of revenge, but to use them as swaddling cloths for the baby Jesus. Amen.